Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. It's a solo episode today because I'm away on a work trip for 5 weeks and Juliana's back at home. And as a little bit of a meta kind of thing, talking about the podcast at the start of the podcast, this is an episode which is like in a series of podcasts that I've been doing over the last year or so, year and a half, where back on episode 550, Juliana and I discussed the SFBRP must-reads list, which is our own kind of like stab at, like a must-read list, a masterworks list, the canon of science fiction. And there's various different criteria for that. One is that, actually, let's just go over to the page. If you go to sfbrp.com, click on the must-read list there. So, it says, which books are the best example of science fiction available to read today? Which books are best for those wanting a deeper dive into science fiction? And which old books stand the test of time? And which new books will we still be thinking about in decades to come? So that's kind of what we're wrapping up there. We got together like 52 books. I think we've added two more books to it since then, maybe 53, 54 episodes. And also I've been rereading books reading books to see, okay, this book won the Hugo and the Nebula and it was from like 1970-something. Is that a good enough book to get onto this list? And some books have got onto the list. Some books have stayed on the list and other books just didn't get added at all. Like I reread like The Hunger Games. I was like, well, no, that doesn't make it onto the list. And what are these other ones as well? There's quite a few of these books where I'm like, does this make it on? It's like, nope. The Long Way to the Small Angry Planet, nope, that doesn't make it onto the list. So there's been a few nopes. And then there's been this one that's considered, Roadside Picnic is one that we're still like, maybe that'll go on the list, maybe not. And then there's other books which I've reread but haven't got to review because here's the thing. It's really difficult to get the like motivation up to review a book when I'm not talking to Juliana about it. So it's just me recording the podcast by myself. And then I'm like, well, what have I got to say about this book? Like, I've read it before. I've read it again before. So this is like my third time reading. Some of these books is like third or fourth times reading the book. And we've already discussed them twice. Like Day of the Triffids by John Wyndham. We've got like 3 episodes about Day of the Triffids already. It's really difficult to like build up the motivation to review one of those again when it's just me sitting in front of my laptop with a microphone, with a headset microphone, talking into the microphone. So I did that with The Quantum Magician because I was like, well, there's stuff that I want to say about that book again. But then these other books, which I definitely want to get to, which is Inversions by Ian M. Banks and Anathem by Neal Stephenson. I'm like, well, I reread them. They're definitely staying on the list. And I want to talk about them again because I've only done like one episode in the past about it. But it's difficult to get to the motivation to do that. And that is until I get to a book, which I'm like, oh, this is on the SFBRP must-reads list. But the reason why I'm rereading this is to check these books are good enough to be on the SFBRP must-reads list. And this one isn't. Which brings me to today's episode, which is Startide Rising by David Brin. Spoilers for this review. This book is listed on the SFBRP must-reads list, but it's getting taken off. I'm going to have to take off this book and just put it down into the considered section down at the bottom of the list because it doesn't stand up. This book is from like 1986 or whatever. Actually, I should look at the Wikipedia page. No, what have I got here? The Goodreads page. So it's from 1983. It won the Hugo Award for Best Novel, the Nebula Award for Best Novel, the Locus Award for Best Science Fiction Novel. So it's won like 3 of the main science fiction awards. It's a Hugo book. That's why when I reviewed it previously in 2014, because that was when I was reviewing every book or made sure I had a review of every book which had won both the Hugo Award and the Nebula Award. And this is one of those books. And in my head, it was like, yeah, of course. And I looked through, you know, when I was making the list of books that were going on the SFBRP must-reads list, I was looking back through, you know, the Hugula Award winners, these multiple award-winning books. And I was looking through and trying to find books which I'd given at least 4 stars to in the past, because that's what it says on the must-read science fiction. It has to be science fiction, a novel, reviewed and rated highly on the SFBRP. So, like, all of these books that I've done, like, reviewed so far or added to the SFBRP must-reads list, except for like 1, is at least a 4-star book, many 4.5 and 5-star books as well. So yeah, when I went back into it, I was expecting, like, a book which I'd given 4 stars to in the past, and a book which stood the test of time, because when I reread it in 2014, I enjoyed it enough to give it 4 stars, and yeah, so there it is. That's my, you know, like, I hadn't really thought about it, but again, I reread it to check if it should go on the book, but I didn't even finish it, because this book... Oh my goodness, it's long. I didn't realize how big it was. Now looking at the Audible page, it says it's 17 hours in 25 minutes. And I was like 30% of the way in, and I was looking down. I was like, there's still 12 hours, like 11 or 12 hours of this book to go. And I got through further, like deeper into the book. And I was like, oh my goodness, nothing's happening. And the stuff that is happening. And so what I had to do as I was going through, I was making notes, which I'll get to in a minute. But I thought I'd actually go back and listen to the review that I did of this book back in well, I don't have the episode here, but I reviewed it in July 2014. So I went back to the SFBRP archive feed, which is every episode so far. You can find it there on the website. Actually, let me just have a look here. Let's type in Uplift here. Uplift Saga, Startide Rising, episode 238. Yeah, July 2014. This is like a long time ago. That's like 11 years ago that I read this book last. And so I listened back to the episode there, and I had, weirdly enough, as I was reading through it, I had the same issues that I had this time, except last time I finished the book because I said I was listening to it on a car journey and was enjoying the book, and I was like, yeah, it's a bit slow at the start, but halfway through it picks up. And I was like, I just didn't even get halfway through this time. And I made some notes about the things that I said in 2014 on that podcast. So you don't need to go back and listen to my previous podcast about that. That's the point of these update episodes, is that these will replace in the feed some previous episodes about it. So I'm going to go through the notes I made as I was listening to this listening to the audiobook this time, and go through some of the notes that I made as I listened to the previous podcast. So first of all, first note is that... the book starts off with little to no explanation of what Uplift is and the Uplift system, which is one of the main reasons that I wanted to include this book in the must reads list, because there's like this in the must reads list, we got like these like sections or little collections that go together, and this was in the Uplift and Aliens thing, which is sort of like addressing what humanity is by looking at them through the view of uplifted animals. And by that means, it's sort of like humans or other aliens find a species which is different from them, like a different evolutionary strain on their own planet or an alien, and then uplift them, which means that you adjust their breeding and genetics over time to manipulate them into becoming more intelligent and becoming tool users, and in some cases becoming slaves or an indentured race in that way. And this has been done in many other times, and of course the Aliens one as well, and the other books in this was of course like the Adrian Tchaikovsky's Children of Time, where that's all about uplift. That's sort of like, oh, we were going to uplift these apes, so we had workers on this planet that we're going to colonize, but then we accidentally uplifted spiders instead. So now this whole book is about sort of like long-term race of spiders, intelligent spiders, and and then intelligent ants, and then intelligent crows and intelligent octopuses. That's the kind of series that I wanted to go into in this, because the Uplift Saga or the Uplift War or Startide Rising and these other books are kind of like the foundational text. It's like where we get the term uplift, the concept uplift. And I was like, that's what I wanted, a book. I wanted like a representative book of by David Brin where this comes through. That's why I reread Sundiver, which is the first novel, which is in the Uplift Saga. And I reread that and I was like, oh no, that's not very good. But weirdly enough, that is the book which explains the Uplift universe the best. It's kind of setting the groundwork. We go into that not knowing what Uplift is, not knowing what humans' role in the Uplift world is, not knowing about all of these other alien races with patron races above them and species or whatever you want to say, like these different alien species with client species below them and patron species above them, and and the hierarchy of the whole universe, and how this is wide-ranging universe, and there's the library, which is like this knowledge base for the entire three galaxies or whatever it is. And I was expecting that to be in this book, but it's not. It's all in Sundiver, or most of it's in Sundiver. And this book starts off with almost no explanation of that. You sort of like, it starts in with Star Tide Rising. It's like, well, we all know what the uplift system is. And now a planet, like an adventure on a watery planet with dolphins. And I'm like, oh, this isn't giving me what I wanted the book to give me, which is an explanation of what uplift is and an exploration of what uplift is. The book isn't doing that. Sundiver did that badly, or not in a great way, but that is what it was doing. But then this one isn't doing that. It's doing another thing. It is talking about intelligence, and it is talking about, you know, language, and it is talking about what it means to be a language user and a tool user using dolphins and apes and humans. But there isn't actually that many other aliens around. And when they do, they're sort of like, it's just like these little insert chapters going galactics, and then just kind of lists some alien species and saying, well, these ones are very dangerous and these ones are very belligerent and these ones are, and but it doesn't actually, we don't actually interact with those aliens. All we're doing is getting the uplift part, which again is fine, but it doesn't explain what the issue is with the book. So yeah, so that's my first note. I was like, oh, what the uplift saga is like three books, and then there's a whole other series of books, which is the, you know, the uplift is explained and explored throughout these novels, but there isn't a single source novel which is sort of like, yeah, this is the, like, this is like the this is doing all the groundwork. The groundwork, or the idea, the concept of uplift, which is what I want to explore, or I wanted to read an exploration of, is spread throughout all of these other books. Which is why it's very interesting then to read other people do, you know, put uplift stuff in their novels, you know, like Adrian Tchaikovsky. And he's sort of like, right, we all assume that we know what uplift is, and now I'm going to do my take on that. You know, and all these other authors have done their own take on, you know, intelligent animals, or animals that gain intelligence via, you know, science fictional gene manipulation and breeding, and, you know, what it means to, for a species of animals to be in the past not intelligent and now they are intelligent. So, yeah, that's criticism number one, that what I thought this book was going to be in here isn't in here. So another thing is that the book starts, and it starts like, you know, halfway through a story. And I was like, oh, that's, and I remember this time, I was like, oh, that's bad. The previous time I reviewed it, I was like, oh, this wasn't even the book I thought it was. I thought this was Brightness Reef or another thing with dolphins going on. And I thought I'd read the book before this, but there isn't a book before this in this story, because this story starts halfway through a space adventure. Like there's a spaceship called the Streaker, and it's been chasing, it's in a battle, and then it's got through this thing, and it's found this, you know, precursor progenitor technology, and it's found a fleet of ancient ships, and it's tried to escape these other aliens who were trying to track it down to find it. And it's sort of like, oh, we all start there, but then immediately the whole story grinds to a halt, because that's just told, we're just told that's what's happened. And then the action starts with no action at all, just with dolphins swimming around, humans having sex with each other, an ape being grumpy. And that's like the first half of the book. I was like, why didn't we get the exciting part where they found the alien fleet of alien ships, these, you know, million-year-old alien ships, and found this alien space? I was like, there's obviously lots of really fun stuff happened there, but that's not in this book. It's just sort of like a really long bit as well. And so one of the notes that I made, one of my main complaints about this novel and the series as well, is that the first novel, which is Sundiver, has a story. It is a story, it's self-contained, and that is what the story is. But then everything else feels like a side story. And this story is like a side story to the main story of the whole series, which is humans and dolphins and apes and gorillas or whatever it is, all kind of finding their place in the universe. And also, like, the, you know, mysterious mystery of space progenitors of this, you know, earliest race or earliest species of aliens going on. And this book is like a side story. But then inside this story are, like, all the other things that are going on while we're waiting around for a 17-hour audiobook until we get to the action sequence in the last third of the book. That all feels like side story as well. And then within these, each individual scene feels like a side story. So I was just sort of like, so it's like a side story of a side story. It's like side stories all the way down. And all the time I was just thinking, when are we getting to the main story? And I said in my previous review, it's like, well, it picks up halfway through. But this time I just didn't get, through the slow part. It felt like everything was there as well. Everything that was there, it felt like it wasn't building up to anything. It was like killing time until we get to it. Cause I've read this book twice. This is my third time through the book. I know what's going to happen. And I didn't find it interesting. Unlike all of these other books, which I've reread and that are staying on the list, while I was waiting for the things to happen that I remembered happening, the stuff that was happening was interesting. And, you know, pushing the plot forward, or if not pushing the plot forward, exploring the world or doing it's the stuff here and stuff there. And this book just felt like, oh, I was just noodling around in circles. Another thing that I put here on, like when I was talking about, when I listened back to the previous episode, which was just a while ago, it's sort of like, what is a race and what is a species? And this is what I keep tripping over when I'm saying it. Is it an alien race or is it an alien species? And while I like the idea of having a book where there is no longer any human-to-human racism in the, you know, in 400 years in the future, whatever it is, then, but the whole book feels like it's like about race and about, you know, what is a species and what is a race. And while I think it's intriguing that someone can kind of come up with like a framework for talking about, you know, what is a species? What is a race? What is determined by genetics and what other? It's rereading it this time. And again, I had the same issues last time, but now it really comes through. I was sort of like, oh, is this like commenting on race? Or does it just feel accidentally like really, really racist? As I was going through, I was sort of like, it's like he's inventing new forms of racism among dolphins and new forms of racism among, you know, the species from Earth, the Earth clan, and then, you know, coming up with new forms of racism for the alien species and races outside looking. And I was like, oh, it feels like he's just lost control of what, like, are we commenting a race or is it just really racist? And as I was going through, I was like, this feels more like it's just like a racist person talking about like coming up with stuff and like saying this and that, because it kind of like all of these analogies are like, this is written in 1983, and now it feels like all these analogies are kind of just being like sprayed at me, and I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do with these. Like, this is a very 20th century novel and I'm reading it in the 20th century, and again had some of the same queries when I read this book 11 years ago, but now it feels even more like, ah. And I think partly that comes from like rereading the another David Brin novel called The Postman, which works really fine as long as it didn't try to tackle any like gender roles or race relations. And when it did get to those points, which again, it's admirable that someone wants to write about those kind of things, but then I'm like, oh, maybe David Brin isn't the right person to be talking about gender roles and race relations, because it feels a little bit tone deaf in both ways. Yeah, and also this book is way more sexist than I remember. In fact, maybe it isn't more sexist than I remember, but it's like, because I was already grumpy about this book, all of these books from the 70s and 80s feel more sexist. Like, again, it feels like he's doing something interesting to be, oh, like, here's a woman in a position of leadership, but then only the women characters are described by how attractive their body parts are and or how attractive they are to the male characters, in this case male characters, both human and dolphin, who are getting like turned on by the women characters, and there's just way fewer women characters. And I was just like, oh no, like I see what you're trying to do here, but also it's rough. It's really rough to read books from 1983 which are tackling like gender roles and things, and I'm like, oh no, is gender roles being tackled by someone who doesn't realize how sexist he's being? Maybe, who knows. So, what else have I got on notes about this? Oh, yeah. And also, there feels to be a lot of, like, human chauvinism and Earth chauvinism. In other words, sort of like going, all right, the whole of the rest of the galaxy, three galaxies worth of alien races, they're all out there doing that thing. But what makes humans special is ... You know, like, in, you know, wanting to rely on themselves, trying to invent things rather than just getting the stuff, like, doing all this, you know, innovation and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, right. This like human and earth chauvinism in this. It kind of maps almost perfectly onto now what I realize is like this American chauvinism. Again, this is a book from the 1980s. It's a Cold War novel, but it might as well be that all of the things that are being written about humanity in the wider world of, you know, whatever, it feels like a very like American view of what makes humans unique or what makes humans admirable or whatever this kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh, right. That's a kind of funny thing. Again, I don't have strong opinions about that. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying that like the human chauvinism comes through in a way which feels very American, of like an American sensibility of like, no, of course we're right. Of course we're right because we're the this. And you're like, oh, right. So it's like whatever you do is the correct thing. And you can just like map that on there as well. So yeah, again, not so much a negative thing, but kind of noticeable this time through. So next up, the stakes of the space battle seem disconnected from any of the planet action. Yes, and that's because, like I say, it feels like the important stuff is happening not on the spaceship that's stuck down in this planet, on this watery planet, and the dolphins going around. I was like, it feels like there's really important stuff happening elsewhere, but because they're cut off from the rest of it, it feels very disconnected. But then what's happening here feels disconnected from everything else. So, like, this... Like, again, oh no, I realize that, yeah, this is just me repeating what I said in the previous review, which is sort of like everything feels like a subplot of a subplot. And, you know, things are disconnected from what's really important. Another thing which makes it very difficult to care about these stories is that everything else is sort of like, oh yes, and then 100,000 years ago, this happened, and then 200,000 years ago, and our species has been here for millions of years. And every other race in the galaxy seems to be fine with talking about, what am I trying to say here, like... They view history as it's normal to view history on scales of hundreds of thousands or millions of years, to say like, well, that's what it was like 100,000 years ago, and that's what it's like now, so that must be right. And it's strange that it's like difficult for me as a human to relate to history that deep, or narratives, because that isn't how humans relate to narratives. And I felt like that would be like too much, like it feels like there's a disconnect in the story that, of course, it's different. Humans are special because we don't have that deep history. Another alien, species, or what do they say, like these lines of species of, you know, of client species and patron species, they have like these deep histories, but the aliens who are there now just what I'm trying to say is like it feels like a very weak, it feels like a straw man argument of what it would be like. It's sort of like we can't be the only alien race, or humans can't be the only race of aliens or species of aliens which have like a window of time of storytelling about themselves which doesn't go back hundreds of thousands or millions of years, or something's a billion years ago. Like, we can barely think about what happened like a few years ago. Like, what we thought, like how we thought in 1983 when this book was written, is like so alien to how we think now as like modern humans, or even just me as a human, because when this book came out it was only 3 years old. But it's like, how, like, it feels difficult to take anything in the book seriously. And I think it would have been better if the alien, like the framework of alien species, only went back a few hundred thousand years, and most species are working on the time frame of, you know, hundreds of years or thousands of years, rather than on this time scale of hundreds of thousands and millions of years. So again, it's different, like I say, it's part of the world building, but it's difficult to get into this when I'm having to think about, right, this is stuff that's happening on, you know, a period of like day by day down here, or week by week, or maybe it'll take this. And at one point it says like it's going to take, you know, decades for this space battle to play out. And that's just what the other space aliens are good with. And I'm like, well, no wonder the book is taking a long time to get through if the kind of concept of storytelling and history takes like decades and decades just to finish one battle. So, and worse than anything else, the book is just boring and I couldn't get through it. And like I say, that hasn't been in an issue with any of the books that I've reread for the must read, reread thing as well. Let me just quickly look through this, my rest of my notes here as well. So, in my previous thing I was like talking about, like the different themes of this book, which is like, is intelligence getting smart, or is intelligence thinking more like humans, or is intelligence thinking more like these, you know, how the rest of the aliens work? And I did actually, this is the kind of thing that was in the book, which I did actually like, and I remember liking the last time, and again, said, just listen to me say, talking about this on the previous podcast, is that there is good stuff in this book. There are interesting ideas, and there are interesting statements being made about intelligence and smartness and all these other kind of stuff. But again, it is it's watered down by this book being a 17-hour audiobook, and I get 9 hours in, and I'm just like, I'm not going to get through to the end of this. So it's not great. And then I was like, why did I rate it so highly? So listening back to this previous review, I kind of had all these complaints about it, and then was sort of like, yeah, 4, 3.5, no, maybe 4 stars. And I was like, I wasn't even that enthusiastic about it in 2014. It wasn't the book that I thought it was, because I thought it was going to be Brightness Reef, or the stuff that I thought was in Brightness Reef was in this book. And it wasn't the book that I thought it was, because it isn't The Explainer of Uplift. But it is, you know, saying, well, it is better than Sundiver. But now I just read Sundiver last year. I think Sundiver might be just as good or better, because that's actually a self-contained story, which has more. Again, it is more sexist and it is more dated. And so, yeah, it's just really weird. Like, why did I end up giving this book 4 stars in 2014? It's just not a 4-star book. At best, it's like a 3-star book, but only a 3-star book if it's the first time that you've read it and you're listening to it as an audiobook and you can't skip forward and it's not just sending you to sleep all the time. And you're not reading it, comparing it against literally The Left Hand of Darkness or Anathem or what are these other books that I've read recently? Yeah, like The Quantum Magician and Ian M. Banks books and Solaris and Speaker for the Dead. I'm like, oh, this book is, even if it is good the first time you read it, and if you read it in the 1980s or 90s, well, I read this book first time in the 90s. Like, even if it is as good as these other books, it just doesn't belong in the same sentence, in the same breath. And it certainly doesn't belong in the same list. So I'm going to give this book this time out 2 stars. If it was the first time reading, and if I'd have got through to the end, and if I'd have read it long ago like I did, it might have had a higher rating. But oh my goodness, this book does not deserve its place on the SFBAP must reads list. So we make a new step in the SFBRP list by SFBRP must reads list by removing a book from 1983. And when we do that, there's going to be now a big gap in the list. 1969, Kurt Vonnegut, Slaughterhouse-5, which I gave 5 stars to, is from 1969. This was the next book. 1983 was the next book. Now the next book is 1984, Kim Stanley Robinson, The Wild Shore. And now, instead of being a 14-year gap between books, missing out the 1970s entirely, there is now a 15-year gap from 1969 to 1984, missing out the 1970s entirely. So I'm still on a mission to find a book which is from the 1970s and now the first half of the 1980s, which stands the test of time, isn't like weirdly about sex and drugs and other stuff that was, you know, happening in the 1970s, has kind of a worldview which I can latch onto and identify with in any way. So yeah, send in your suggestions, because I can tell you something, it hasn't been The Forever War or Gateway novel or some of these other books that I've reread from the 1970s. So yes, I think, is that everything I have to say? Yeah, 2 stars. That's it. How long has this podcast been going on? 28 minutes. All right, let's wrap this up and we can finish within half an hour. I think that's the good thing about these solo episodes that I'm doing here, is that I can get through all of my notes pretty quickly. And Juliana doesn't ask for clarifications and I don't have to explain anything. So yeah, this has been a little bit of a meta podcast where I talk about the SFBRP must reads list and reflect back on a previous podcast that I reviewed. Again, I listened back to the review. Didn't even sound like I enjoyed the book that much last time I read it in 2014. What was I thinking? It's off the list. All right, you can email me, luke@juggler.net. You can become my friend on goodreads.com. Oh, well, that's what I normally do, isn't it? I go to Goodreads and see what other people say. Yeah, so Ryan Fisher rated it at 5 stars. Rick rated it 5 stars. Mario the Lone Book Wolf rated it 4 stars. Diva Diana, 4 stars. Joe, 4 stars. All these, Isabel, Ned, Dylan, Peter rated it 3 stars, and Tom Rowe rated it 3 stars. He says, this is the first audiobook that I have listened to on a faster speed setting. I found the beginning kind of boring. This is probably because I don't care much for dolphin stories. I think they're just too cute. The book did grow on me after a while, and I would like to read more in this series in the future. Maybe it was because of the meaner, more feral dolphins. I was particularly attracted to the alien species that Bryn created, and at first I was more interested in those. Yeah, so yeah, I wanted alien species, and the meaner, feral dolphins. Just felt like he was inventing, like, racist attacks on dolphins. I was like, no, don't have an evil person creating a race of dolphins which then you can be racist against and are racist against other people. I was like, that's not fun. I don't just want to rehash race relations, but like transposed onto dolphins, that's not fun. Anyway, some good reviews. Oh, more reviews from people I follow. Oh, Guillermo rated it 2 stars. And Michael rated it 2 stars, and Joel rated it 2 stars. So yes, Joel wrote a long review of this. Anyway, yes, Michael rated it 2 stars. He says the concept of uplift wasn't portrayed in a way that managed to intrigue me. There is not much imaginative tech in this book either, and yeah, that's the thing. This book spends most of its time on intership, inter- and interspecies office politics between one-dimensional characters. Yeah, it does. It's like the whole first half of the book. I was like, I don't just want one-dimensional characters doing office politics. And yeah, uplift. Not portrayed in this book, interestingly enough. Read other books with interesting aliens and uplift instead. And yes, so I think that's it for me. Oh yeah, become my friend on Goodreads so I can also see what you think of books like this and others. Recommend books from the 1970s which you think are good enough to get here onto the SFBRP must-reads list. The whole point is that they have to be from the 70s. I have to rate them 4 stars or more. They have to stand the test of time, and they have to be good examples of getting of ways to get deeper into science fiction. In that case, it's the history of science fiction. So that's it for me for this episode. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.